hey, Team Mafia here. This can only be the fucking curse of Ebony White. I have tried to start this so many times, and I'm telling you, there must be something about this character that just curses everyone who tries to do anything involving him. Because I'm trying to review The Spirit, Volume 5, I think, Issue 7 from 75. And yeah, it's an Ebony White issue. The Spirit, of course, being a, for the two or three of you who don't know, yeah, he's just a dude in a suit and a mask who, like, beats up bad guys. Ebony White is arguably more interesting. He's sort of the Spirit's sidekick. He's incredibly offensive. I mean, goddamn. Yeah, like, if you think, like Buckwheat was offensive, no, forget it. Buckwheat had nothing on Ebony White. I mean, goddamn. And it even says right here on the cover, all Ebony issue. Like, that's supposed to make me want to buy it. Okay, see, I'm already offended by the fucking letters. This one dude, oh, what a surprise, he's from New Jersey, says, I see nothing undignified in Ebony. All right, for those of you who really have never read The Spirit, yeah, Ebony is the sidekick, and, like, okay, he looks like a human being now in 2009, but back in the day, back in the 40s when most of these came out, he looked like every other cartoon black stereotype that you would see, which is my way of saying goddamn. Oh, on a semi-related note, I just want to give, The Spirit of Walt Kelly a shout out, because I think it was in Pogo, he had like a black kid, and like he actually drew the kid looking like a human being. So of course, like, the syndicate made him remove the character, because they're like, hey, you're gonna confuse people. They're used to black people in comics looking like Ebony White. Yeah, so even here in the letters page, this dude from Jersey actually says, I see nothing undignified in Ebony. No, I really suppose you don't, living in New Jersey there, and I'm sure you share your pro-Ebony White opinions with your fellow Klansmen at the meetings. Moving on. Okay, see, and here. This Dana Utz character, and I'm going to assume he's a dude because girls don't read comics, has written a letter saying it's normal for a kid his age, Ebony White, who is old enough to drive a cab, I might say, so he's he's at least 16. It is normal for a kid his age to spell words incorrectly. Yeah, Ebony White actually misspells like every second or third word, so yeah. Also, Dana Utz goes on to say a child wouldn't have perfect grammar either. Ebony White has no grammar. Human beings do not talk like Ebony White, okay? They just don't. Hey, what a surprise. The first Ebony White letter was from some dude from New Jersey, and this Dana character is from the Midwest. Yeah, enough said. Okay, here in the first story. Now see, here's what I have to admit. These stories are funny, you know, but that's because they were written and drawn by Will Eisner, who, like, pretty much accomplished whatever he set out to do creatively, and if he wanted to be funny, he was funny. Doesn't make it less offensive. But, yeah, they're okay. The stories are entertaining for whatever that's worth. Anyhow, yeah, the first story, Ebony is, like, after these dudes for whatever reason. And the standout running gag in here is there's a baby with a baseball bat who keeps beating the shit out of Ebony White through the whole story. Like, I assume it's a baby, because it could be a midget, because, like, he's talking like he's an adult, but I don't think it's, like, spelled out at any point, so I'm just assuming he's a really smart baby. Anyway, yeah, you know what, they got me, because Any story with an evil baby in it is automatically cool. So, okay, I really can't put this one down. I will put the next story down, though, because, yeah, it's called Hoagie the Yogi, and it just, it's a two-part story, and it goes on and on, and it's not terribly funny, even though the Hoagie character is, okay, he's moderately amusing, like just a little bit. But, yeah, I don't think it's for nothing that outside of this two-parter, you know, they never brought this character back. This is not Eisner at his best. But this next story here. Oh, yeah, this magazine is loaded with fucking stories, man. This had to be a bargain. What was the cover price? I don't even know. Let me check. Hold on. Hey, it was $1.25 in 1975 dollars. That is not bad. Anyway, yeah, this next story, this is a good one. interesting. 1948. And Ebony gets a job here. Well, they should make up their minds because, like, if he is a kid, what's he doing getting, like, grown-up jobs? But, okay, I'll just accept it. Anyway, he's the bill collector now for this dude who's a TV salesman, and you should see these 1948 model televisions. Wow. Yeah. Mm. And what the hell was there even to watch in 1948? Ah, fuck it. Oh, for anybody interested, apparently in 1948 TVs went for $50, and you could like get one with a $5 down payment. And then you would like pay it off over time, you know, that whopping $50. Yeah, see, this is a cool gimmick. Like, here's a couple arguing in front of the TV that's on, but it turns out like all the TVs that this dude is selling, they're like two-way televisions, and like the evil TV salesman dude is on the screen, and here, like, you know, this dude's wife. And this is pretty funny because, like, he's all, like, little and nerdy, and Eisner made her big and grotesque. And, okay, that never fails. That's automatically funny. In fact, he knows that we, the readers, are not even, like, reading what she's saying. And, like, she's yelling at the dude in this giant word panel, and the words are getting smaller and smaller, and towards the bottom, she's just saying blah, 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 because that's all he's hearing at that point. Anyway, yeah, the evil TV salesman's on the TV. And he's like, how long are you going to let her push you around? And, well, he talks the dude into killing her, which is awesome, actually. And then there's a knock at the door. Now, we know it's Ebony, you know, coming for the TV payment. But, you know, dude thinks it's the cops, mainly because the TV salesman on the TV is saying, the cops? Sure, they must have heard her scream. And, yeah, now the dude's, like, all freaking out, and he shoots himself. This is what I love about, like, old cartoons and comics and stuff. There's no political correctness. There's no nothing. The dude just shoots himself. These strips were in the fucking Sunday newspapers of the time. When was the last time any of you saw a character shoot themselves in a comic strip in a newspaper? Yeah, exactly. So that's actually pretty cool. So this keeps happening. Like, you know, there's another couple, which is interesting because it looks like it's a lesbian couple. Huh. But, yeah, the one kills the other again at the goading of the TV salesman on the TV. And, of course, Ebony discovers the corpses again because he's supposed to be collecting. But whatever. This is just, I like this story. This was a good one. Here in the end, the spirit turns things around on the TV salesman dude. And the spirit's on TV. They know what you're doing. You better turn yourself in. Then he, you know, just turns the guy's game around on him. Then we have a story that, even though it's been colorized, which is interesting, and interesting that they have Ebony with, I mean, you think they would try to, like, downplay the fact that he's an offensive stereotype, but, for some reason, they gave him bright pink lips on top of everything else in this colorized story. So clearly, nobody was worried about offending anybody in 1975. So I'm going to call Eisner on this, because in 79, he gave a interview to the Comics Journal where he admitted that maybe the Ebony White stuff was offensive. Maybe. And then, of course, you know, in the 80s, when he was getting real old and was close to death and feeling guilt or whatever, yeah, then he would admit, yeah, that was offensive. Yeah, I shouldn't have done it, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we've got the real unrepentant Will Eisner at work here. Anyway, the color story is pretty funny. The premise is there's a doctor and a nurse, and here Ebony goes getting another job working for the doctor. And it's supposed to be like a radio soap opera, which, okay, is funny when the characters actually talk like it's a radio soap opera. Like, the nurse is like, a dark cloud is passing over our sun-swept sky. A veil is covering our happy valley. And it goes on and on and on. And, okay, that's almost clever. Now, what's interesting is this story came out the year after that TV story. So, yeah, well, yeah, how about that? So I guess TV and radio were sort of like both vying for the masses there. And what a surprise that the medium that has pictures would win that battle, but what are you going to do? Okay, the next story is probably the best one next to the TV story because, well, it's about a duck. The end. No, really, it's about a duck, and there's not a lot more to it, but we get the perspective of the duck rather than the humans. So, like, that amused me. Anyway, he falls off the duck truck here, passing Ebony White and his clearly corrupt friend. You know his friend is no good because he has a bowler hat and a fur coat. Yes, definitely not someone to be trusted. Anyway, Ebony wants to keep this duck as a pet, and his friend wants to sell him to, I guess, you know, a butcher? Yeah, there you go. So this story is nothing but nonsense, but it is pretty funny. I mean, it's a whole thing. You have a smuggler here, and, you know, he's an offensive Italian stereotype, but what are you going to do? Yeah, the duck the duck eats one of his diamonds, and it's a whole thing. Yeah, pretty decent. And, you know, just when the story could have potentially, like, you know, gone to crap... No. The duck gets run over by a taxi cab, and the spirit takes it home. For, you know, him and Ebony and Commissioner Dolan and Ellen and all of them to eat as part of a fancy dinner. So I like any story where, like, the protagonist winds up eating at the end. That's pretty awesome there, actually. You know, here we have the next to last story, which... is about an Eskimo chick. And I should say, yes, this is a story where Ebony White meets his intellectual equal. Because, well, she's about as stupid as he is. And she also talks, well, offensively. Because I'm sure real Eskimos don't say things like, man-child, much sick. Okay, whatever. You know, mainly what I got from this story is, goddamn, so Will Eisner just pretty much... It was pretty funny, though. I mean, I'll give it that. But, yeah, Eisner apparently considers anybody who's not a white male, comedic, sort of buffoon. Even the Italian guy was like, you know, Mamma Mia and all that shit. I mean, and yet interestingly, you know, Eisner being Jewish, there are no Jewish stereotypes. Huh, I wonder why, but okay. Well, anyway, finally wrapping all this up is, well, a pretty lame story. Didn't like this one so much. Although I did like that, like, Ellen is apparently going to marry the spirit, and Ebony's all pissed off because, of course, you know, he wants to continue having adventures and fighting crime with him, and he figures if he marries Ellen, you know, the spirit's going to pretty much give all that up or whatever. Okay, that was a cute touch, but mostly, this story was worth it for this one panel where Ellen falsely thinks the spirit is jealous, and she's actually laughing to herself while staring at the spirit in an evil way, proud that she is eliciting his jealousy. Goddamn, is she a bitch? Yeah, that's pretty much what I took away from this particular story, is that one panel, because damn. So anyway, overall, you know, it was funny more than it wasn't, but Ebony is just so fucking grotesque. It's hard. You can't get that. I mean, it's a comic book. It's visual. You're looking at him. So it's hard to ignore that he is an offensive racial stereotype. But thanks to Eisner's genius, not always impossible. I mean, a lot of this was pretty good, even if some of it was awful. But, you would just hope that, Eisner would be punished in some way, shape, or form for his obvious racism. And, he's dead. Oh. Well, okay then, cool. After these messages,
we'll be right back. Smoke was filling up the house, a burning, yearning heat. The cats were watching through the haze and licking at their feet. They were licking at their feet. A caller came and looked at me and asked me if I'd mind. I said I would not normally, my work is so behind. I'm just way behind.
The fire sparkled in his smile and then beneath his skin. And so he jumped right in, right in, and so he jumped right in.
Oh, by the way, this is Podcast X, which I probably should have said like at the start of the other review, but what are you going to do? Also, I suddenly remembered I said I wasn't going to do these solo shows anymore. Yeah, well, apparently I lied, so there you go. Okay, Runaways, Volume 3, Issue 7. And, if you don't like this review, you can pretty much blame Vicious Smith, because he's making me review this. By making, I mean like he requested, and I'm like, I haven't reviewed Runaways since episode 3, so okay, it's probably time now. And rather than give you any background or details on the Runaways, first of all, fuck any of you who weren't reading the book back when it was good, when Whedon and Brian Vaughn were writing it, but even so, you should have heard the other older episode and should know all about them anyway, so I ain't catching you up. On the cover, the cover sucks. It's first of all, it's boring. It's a stock cover. They're literally just standing there, and it's not Humberto Ramos's best work, which is good because as of this issue, he's apparently not the artist anymore. Let me try to pronounce this name. Instead, we have as the artist Takeshi Miyazawa. Okay. Whose style I do much prefer to Ramos's, so there you go. Now, on the downside, it's written by Terry Moore, who really sucks. Did I mention he sucks? No, he does. He used to do this book, Strangers in Paradise. It was awful. It was like a parody of a soap opera, but you were supposed to take it seriously, somehow, and I read the first six issues of his Runaways run, and bad. Oh, anyway, yeah, this is Volume 3, Issue 7 here. It's part one of a story called Rock Zombies, of which I will not be reading any more parts because I just can't take it anymore. Again, he sucks, and I really don't want to read his writing unless I'm being paid to or something. He is bad. He should be fired. He should not have a career. Anyway. Yeah, it opens up. The kids are playing a video game on TV, woohoo, whatever. And, you know, here we have the latest addition to the team. And even though I like most of Joss Whedon's creations, I'm not really big on her. She's this boring little kid, Clara, from the year 1908, and she really needs to go back there, frankly. Also, she replaced the much more interesting... what was her name? Zavin, the shape-changing she-male Skrull, who was like 10 times more interesting than this boring little girl. Oh, she has plant powers. Okay, yeah, that's pretty much it. So, fuck her. And, okay, well, she does look cute here, so actually I would like to fuck her, literally. But, in fact, there's a panel in here where, and I shit you not, the artist gives her breasts. Okay, this little girl is like 10 years old, so clearly she is ready. So I'll give the character that. That's something. Okay, anyway, they're all Molly and Clara and what's that? What the fuck is the android robot thing's name? The robot. Yeah, him. Anyway, they're... You can tell he's not my favorite character either. They're playing a game on TV, and oh, look, it's Chase. And Chase, being 18, now has a job, and good for him. Even though I don't see how he is supporting all of them on what is undoubtedly a minimum wage salary, but what are you going to do? Anyway, next scene. Oh, look, we have, what's her name? Nico and Carolina are walking on the beach here, looking... pretty hot, both of them, and here they are holding hands, and yeah, I'd love to see lesbian action they, for some unknown reason, intentionally left out of this scene. But anyway, actually nothing happens, which is clearly an evil-coded fascist message to the young females in the reading audience, which is, don't eat pussy. And I ask, why the fuck not? Come on. And let us guys watch. I mean, what the fuck? What's the harm? Ugh. Oh, no, little girls. Go ahead, fuck little boys and, I don't know, get AIDS. You know, die. Yeah, that's a much better message, Marvel. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Anyway, cut to the radio station that Chase works at now, and there's this dude, Val. Yeah, he's, Val's an evil genius, and even though he's got, like, apparently no motivation for any of the evil shit that he does, whatever, just a bad character, and here he is, he just wants to do something with zombies, I guess kill a bunch of people, again, for no apparent reason, like, you know, Brian Vaughn would have had him have a reason, but Brian Vaughn, as opposed to Terry Moore, is a real writer. Anyway, he wants to do something with zombies, and okay, I'll give him that zombies are pretty cool. He's got this dude here. They even give this guy a name. Apparently not. Okay, well, I'm just gonna call the guy Black Dude, because he's a black dude. Don't blame me, blame Terry Moore. Anyway, you know, being black, he, of course, is a voodoo guy. Okay, again, I did not write this. Please send any letters of complaint to Terry Moore, who is responsible for all this mess. Fake Howard Stern wants an army of zombies. The voodoo guy's like, yeah, we can do that. And for some reason, all the people who are going to become zombies need to have something in common. And both of them realize that, hey, we're in Los Angeles, and... probably about half the city has had plastic surgery. So there you go. By the way, I would dispute that. I would say closer to 90-95% of the people who live in LA are pretty damn shallow and have had plastic surgery, probably. Not that any of them would admit it. In fact, anybody in LA who denies having plastic surgery, that's proof that they've had it. Aha. So there. Anyway, moving on. Oh, God. Horrible scene. And it's like 8 pages long. It's just a stupid fight scene between the runaways. And by the way, here you go. Yep, I'm looking at that chick. See, they don't give Molly... Molly has, like, little bitty titties. But, yeah. That 10-year-old, she's wearing a real bra. She's even out of training bras, man. What the fuck are they thinking? Although, okay, I do appreciate that touch, so why am I complaining? Anyway, this whole scene sucks. It sucks really bad. It's just there to fill out the comic, to be a token fight scene. I don't care, and so, moving on. Back to the radio station, where the only action we're going to hear about in future issues is actually happening. God damn, this is some bad, lazy writing. See? I mean, okay. The book went down a little bit during the Whedon arc. I'll admit, Whedon's work wasn't as good as Vaughn's, but, you know, these are Vaughn's characters, so of course. But this has been garbage, and I read the first 6 issues of this. You know what? Nobody buy this book. Do not support this book. If you must read Terry Moore's Runaways, please, for the love of Elvis, download it. Do not give this guy money. If we all band together, you know, we can put this guy on welfare. He does not deserve a career. He sucks. Moving on. This same scene here in the radio station. Yeah, Chase is hitting on this secretary, even though she's redheaded and therefore clearly evil. But he's only 18, so he doesn't know that yet. I do like that she's like blowing him off, like, you got no money, fuck off. And he's like, oh yeah, well, someday I'll be rich. And she's like, right. Yeah, good for her, because Chase is not the brightest guy in the world. So, yeah, that's it. That's the last we see of any of the runaways in this comic, because now the fake Howard Stern guy is playing the CD that he has made with the voodoo guy's voodoo on it for the redheaded secretary to listen to, because there you go. Something's happening to her. First of all, it looks like the work on her face has come undone. So that's awesome all by itself, because now you see she's got like a big bulbous nose. And yeah, she looks bad. I no longer want to fuck her, I have to admit. So, on top of that, like, you know, she starts bleeding and she collapses and screams. And, you know, that's cool. You know, I like to see terrible things happen to women. You know, the bitches deserve it. And apparently he feels the same way, because he's got an evil little smile on his face. Oh, look, the voodoo guy's like walked into the room. The voodoo guy's like, is it working? Fake Howard Stern is like, did something. I don't know what. And the voodoo guy is like, rise. And what's left of the redheaded chick does indeed stand up. And now she's a horrible monster. Cool. The voodoo guy says, well, there you have it. Lydia, the mother of our zombie army. And to be continued, and... look. This is awful. Vicious, why'd you make me review this? No, fuck that. Why'd you make me read this? I'm out. I don't care what happens next. If and when the Runaways ever get another superior, which would be just about anybody, writer, I'll probably be back. But I really don't care about this fucking book anymore. My God, does Terry Moore fucking suck. Ugh. Yeah, so on that note, I am out of here. If you haven't seen Watchmen, yeah, go see that, because as opposed to this Runaways, Watchmen is actually pretty damn good. I mean, it would have been perfect if it had kept the giant squid from the comic, but hey, what are you going to do?